Hey, Smutters.
Hey, everybody.
Ooh. I just burped.
I know.
Sorry.
Dragon breath.
Sorry. How's your week been?
It was okay until just now.
Sorry. Well, we've actually had a really good week, right?
I mean, it's not been bad. I mean, nothing interesting's really happened to for me, I guess.
Well,
I did get better looking, but other than that.
I mean, that happens always. But, y'all, I have been so excited about this. And I have to let y'all know. I was looking to do research.
And you're pregnant.
Gross, no. What? No, I was researching for a haunted ritual that we were doing tonight, and I found an article, and I was reading it, and I was scrolling down, and they did an article about us.
About who?
About the podcast.
Oh, about you.
What?
Because you told me you're the talent.
Whatever. And it's so cool. I actually saved it. But it's like a whole article, and then in bold letters it says Supernatural Smut Podcast Hooded Man Ritual, and it goes on to talk about that. And at the end it says it's a must listen for paranormal enthusiasts. So there wasn't anything bad said.
Yay.
And I have been on like cloud 9 because of this article, and it was written like a year ago. So
was it really?
Yeah, it was written a year ago, and I just came across it like the other day. Well, then last night I was on Instagram and we follow, I think it's the Dead Podcast. And she posted on her Instagram, she tagged us and said, and there was several other podcasts on there, but we were one of them saying that people needed to check us out.
That's really cool.
So freaking cool.
See what I do for your business?
I know.
We need to get merchandise with my face on it.
I think that's a great idea. Like hoodies and t-shirts.
Yes,
and
all with my idea or stickers, my face on it. And
stickers.
Then we can also do like what grinds Troy's gears.
Okay.
And bumper stickers and all kind of stuff.
I would love to do merchandise. We've talked about that before too. We just got to figure out how to get into that. So, but yes, I've been just so happy about this because I was like, you know, finally we see something about our podcast that, you know, we didn't even know about. And I was super excited, and that happened on Instagram. And of course I reposted it and tagged the Dead Podcast. And I was like, thank you so much, you know. And I thought that was just very cool. And it really just made my day. So.
That's pretty cool.
That is very cool.
Good job.
To us. Good job to both of us. So
I do carry it.
You do. Your back has got to hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So we are doing a haunted ritual. So it may not be a very long episode tonight. And also, the instructions are actually in the story, okay? Because when you look up, it's called the window game. And when you look up the window game, there's so many different window games.
Like a Wendigo?
No, window, like that you look out of.
Window to the wall, the sweat drops down.
These balls. So, as I said, yes, the instructions are in the game. And we can go ahead and dive on in. It may not be very long, but I thought it was just a very cool story.
All right.
Let me find it. Okay. Now, before I get into it, there was some advice before going into this game. Now, it says, if you're going to play this game, you should take some precautions. So I'll read you the precautions, just so you'll know, okay?
Read the precautions.
Okay. First, train yourself by staring at mind-bender puzzles. Those trick your mind and your eyes and cause you to lose sensitivity to depth perception. So if something jumps out at you while you're playing, you're less likely to flinch. Second, before you play, use some eye drops. It sure would be a terrible way to lose if you blink just because your eyes were dry. Third, make some insurance for yourself. Write a note addressed to your dad and then leave it with someone you trust before you play the game. Tell them that they should only deliver it if they don't hear from you for a day or two. That's scary. Mm-hmm. Explain in the note, but not to the individual you leave it with, what it is that you did. Your dad may never be mad at you, but he's still your dad. Oh, it says your dad may be mad at you, but he's still your dad. He'll do whatever he can to come find you if things go south. Finally, realize the game may not be what you think it is. It may alter your reality or control you without you realizing it. Normally, I would recommend keeping a weapon on you, but that might actually be more dangerous to you. In cases like this, find something that can anchor you to your reality. If you've watched Inception, you know what I mean by that. Best of luck.
Oh my goodness.
Right?
I was looking at something on Facebook.
Oh, okay. So
look at this little Yorkie. A little fluffy, little perfect little thing.
I've never seen one like that. It's black and white and brown.
Oh, no, I like that one.
So cute.
Cutie pie. I'll send this to you.
Okay. Okay, are we ready?
Yep. Let's get her done.
Let's do it. So, due to a set of extenuating circumstances, I found myself chasing the pavement for any substantial amount of distance with my father for the first time since his release from the state penitentiary.
Wow.
The details of why we were currently on this trip I will not bore you with, as I have made several posts documenting the ordeal, of which you are free to explore if you so wish. But let me iterate that this story does not hinge on any of those, and they are not required reading to understand this one, and that this story stands alone on its own merits. The reason I decided to take pause from our ongoing saga and present this separately as its own entity is simply due to my intrigue over the whole thing. Call it morbid curiosity, I suppose.
Morbid curiosity.
I don't like that. I follow a page called Morbid Curiosity on Instagram, and it's all scary stuff.
Ooh.
Ooh. We had been on the road for maybe 3 hours with another three to go before we'd reached our destination. It was at the point that something about my dad's behavior struck me as odd. I realized that up until then, since we'd first put rubber to asphalt, my father, whom was riding shotgun, had been staring purposefully and with great conviction directly at the floorboards, as if he was avoiding the scenery whipping past us outside. So I decided to ask him about it. "Admiring your shoes," I jested. My voice breaking the silence jarred him a bit, apparently having been lost in thought. "Hmm? Oh, no, I just don't like windows is all." My interest piqued, and I probed him further. "You don't like windows, but why?" "It's just, well, sometimes I see things, and there's this lady, and well, look, I've got a lot on my mind right now. How about we put a fork in it and discuss it later this evening, all right?" "Yeah, sure," I replied, now even more curious than I had been.
Very curious.
Did he say sometimes he sees a lady? What?
Say, huh? Oh, I completely forgot. Can you pause for a second?
Pause.
So, I forgot, our special guest got in touch with me earlier today.
Uh-huh.
He said if you would quit being a raging asshole by the next episode, if you would believe that he is would come, then he will come.
What was his name again?
It's not funny. I know his name.
Okay, I was just going to apologize.
Smitty.
Okay.
Smitty Jones.
All right, Smitty, I apologize, and I hope you can make it for next episode.
He died in 1864.
All right. That's fine. All right. Okay.
Just wanted to remind y'all.
All right, so where was I? So he saw a lady, or he didn't like looking out the window because sometimes he sees a lady, I think is what he said. As the day rolled on, we found ourselves sitting in a corner booth of a rundown IHOP. And though my father had probably hoped I'd forgotten about the whole thing, I looked up over my syrupy stack of pancakes and asked him, "So, what's the deal with the windows?" Obviously wishing I would have just dropped the subject, he hesitantly replied, "It's nothing really. It's just this game that me and the other inmates used to play."
Yeah, I'll drop the soap.
Game, right. I pestered. "Yeah, it's the windows game. You know you're going to have to explain it, right?" He sighed and then proceeded to divulge the details of the windows game. "I didn't figure you'd let it go that easy. Should have known better than to bring it up in the first place. But all right, I guess I should start with theory behind it. Well, the basic idea is that if you were to stare out of the window, the same window, indefinitely for the rest of time, eventually you'd see everything there is to possibly see on the other side of the glass at some point. The window game was a way to speed that process up. Clearly, for an inmate serving time, the thought of anything new to look at outside their cell is appealing to say the least. So you just look outside your window for a while and the view suddenly changes," I posited, the skepticism in my voice evident. "Not exactly. There are rules, and you need a game master to start." "Rules and a game master?" "Yeah. I don't know who exactly discovered the game. The inmates had been playing it long before I got there, but a cellmate of mine is the one who introduced it to me. He told me that to play the game, all you need is an AM radio and a window. Now, you also need a bit of luck and persistence, I discovered. But as far as game pieces, that's all you need. See, to start a round, you have to tune into the right station. That's not always easy." "The right station? The game is broadcasted from the radio?" "Yeah," he replied, "but it's hard to find. It's never at the same time and never on the same channel, and the broadcast is only up while the game is going on. Plus, once it's progress, you can't play that round. I don't know why, but if you start even a few minutes late, it just doesn't work. So anyway, the rules of the game are simple. While the game master plays a sound, you stare out the window until you hear it stop. You absolutely, under no circumstances, are permitted to look away or close your eyes while a sound is playing. The sound always ends with a loud beep, so you know when they're over. When the beeping stops, you close your eyes and don't open them until the next sound starts. And you keep repeating this process until the game master tells you that the game has ended." "Well, what kind of sounds does he play? What's the object of it? So far, it sounds like you're just doing prolonged blinks out of your window. Not much of a game." "The sounds can be anything, really. They mimic whatever is on the other side of the glass. At first, it's usually just crickets or the wind. But the longer the game goes, the things outside the glass start to change. For the first bit of the game, it's basically what you described. You're just standing there looking out the window at the prison yard or the razor wire fence. I'm not sure why it always takes so long to kick in. Maybe the game master is just making sure you understand the rules. After a while, though, the outside starts to change. The prison yard turns into the New York skyline, and you're no longer looking out from a ground-level cell, but instead out of the 40th floor of a Manhattan high-rise. And the crickets in your ears are replaced by bustling traffic and city life below. The next thing you see might be a waterfall or a mountainscape. Sounds from the radio reflecting whatever scene you happen upon. Those are the easy levels. The reason the inmates continued to play the game, even with the knowledge of the harder ones." Perplexed, I inquired deeper. "Harder levels?" "Well, yeah. It's a game after all, right? The object of which is to not look away. If everything is sunshine and roses, that wouldn't be all that difficult. But the game wants you to lose. It wants you to flinch, to break the rules. Sometimes the things on the outside of your window are darker in nature. One second, you're staring at the ocean, and the next, you're bearing witness to a murder. But whatever you do, whatever you see, you can't look away. You can't let the game trick you into closing your eyes. Otherwise, it wins." "What happens if you close your eyes when a sound is playing?" His face became very grave and serious in appearance as he warned me. Nothing good, I can assure you. People who break the rules, well, let's just say, they don't wind up passing go. So someone has broken the rules before then, I asked, shifting my gaze from the road to the rearview mirror, meeting my father's solemn eyes peering back at me. Defeated, almost, he said. Look, I'll tell you the story solely on the pretense that after I tell you, you never ask me about the game again, and more importantly, you never try to play it. Deal? I knew from his tone, Tom, that this was a take-it-or-leave-it type of thing, and there should be no room for negotiations. Sure, deal. He inhaled deeply, and as exhaled, he began. We used to play the game all the time, my cellmate and me. I mean, every spare moment we had, we devoted to scanning the radio for the Game Master's broadcast. After a few years of constant searching and obsession, we'd managed to successfully play a handful of times without incident. Well, one night, Anders, my cellmate, was turning the dial of his little RCA radio when, to our elation, he stumbled across a fresh game starting its broadcast. Hello, all you window watchers and glass gazers. This is your Game Master, and tonight, boy, do we have a doozy of a challenge for your pain-peering pleasure. Remember, once I play the first sound, don't take those eyes off the prize, and you can sleep at the beep. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let me be the first to welcome you to the Window Game. And as always, enjoy the view. Before he even finished speaking, Anders and I were already standing in position in front of our small window, eyes closed, waiting for the first sound. It wasn't long before the crickets and the breeze just beyond our walls was transmitting inside them as we opened our eyes to a familiar landscape. Chirp, 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 beep. Instinctively, we squeezed our eyelids shut until again the chirping broke the silence. This rinse and repeat process continued on for some time as we eagerly waited in anticipation for the good stuff to start. Finally, whoosh! All of a sudden, I open my eyes and I'm awestricken to behold that where the poorly maintained prison lawn had just been is now the roaring water spewing forth from the mouth of a babbling brook. It is so beautiful and I'm so lost in my trance that I almost forget to close my eyes when I hear the next beep. When the next sound plays, we are greeted to a snowy street of a quaint town. Laughter of children in the distance reverberates off of our cold cell walls as they loft handfuls of white powder gleefully at one another. Beep. The next scene is in a restaurant. The clinking and clattering of silverware on plates can be heard, distinct from the merging conversations of its many patrons. In the foreground, a man drops to one knee and pops the question to an instantly emotional young woman. Her feelings are obvious, but before she can answer, beep. The next thing to appear outside our window isn't quite as pleasant, however. We are met with a dark alley and the sound of a struggle, of grunting and meaning, and the crashing of metal trash cans as we watch two men badly beat and mug a third. The mugged man falls to the ground and starts crawling away from his attackers down the alley and in our direction. One of the muggers pulls a gun from their coat and points it at him. Then, beep! During the interlude, Anders breaks the silence with a thought I had been thinking. Damn, he said. It's never started this early before. Yeah, it usually takes a... I was interrupted by the sound of scraping against hardwood. In front of us was an empty room of all white walls. A moment later, a man dragging a chair behind him enters the frame from the left side of the window. He positions the chair directly in the center of the room, facing towards us. He is frail and old, and balding. His face is haggard and lined with a lifetime of wrinkles. He proceeds to sit in the chair, and there's just static silence on the radio. He reaches down and pulls something out from behind his loafers tucked inside of his worn jeans. The gleam of the solitary hanging bulb above him reflects off of the object, and the shine hits my eye. I almost do it. I almost blink in reaction to its beam briefly passing over my pupils, and I manage to catch myself. And I also manage to catch a glimpse of the object that he retrieved from his pant leg, which I know make out to be a butcher's knife. He held it in his lap in both hands, palms cradling it affectionately as he ogled it in admiration. and then slowly, his face tilts upward to meet our unflinching gaze. Instantly, his lips curl up into this exaggerated, toothless smile as he grips the handle of this knife in his left hand and rears it up over his shoulder. In horror, we are forced to watch as he thrusts it downward and into his stomach and then up again before resheathing it. Is that how you say it? Yeah. Into his gut once more, and then once more, and again after that, then again, and again. The sound of it was so guttural, so disturbing. His smile never waned as he violently skewered himself for what must have been minutes. His intestines started spilling out from his now gaping belly and into his lap, and eventually his arms started to slow as his head fell limp. His hands fell to his side and dangled lifelessly as a dripping red knife fell to a widening pool of blood on the floor. The radio fell silent again, and the window lingered on the gruesome scene. "Fuck, come on, man, change already," Anders pleaded. Finally, and not a second too soon, beep. We were relieved to see the next scene, feeling the pains was more melancholy, as were the ones that followed. The game does that sometimes. It tries to lull you into tranquility, trick you into getting too comfortable. As we shifted from one joyous spectacle to another, we soon found ourselves staring down the barrel of a long and dimly lit corridor. It appeared to be a hallway. It appeared to be a hospital, but was bereft of its occupants. There were no nurses or doctors, no bustling through the halls. I've seen lots of scary movies like that. Mm-hmm. As we continued our mandatory scope of it, a door at the end of the wing creaked open. Through the open doorway, a man in a hospital gown inches through, and even from the distance, I could tell that he had been horribly burned. His skin was charred, and fabulous plumes shook free from him with the slightest of movements. As he stepped further into the center of the corridor, I could see that behind him on the sterile white tiles, he left a trail of sooty footsteps, marking his path like an inverted version of a hike through the snow. "God, would you look at this guy," Anders said of the man. Just as I did, the burned man in the hall wrenched his head robotically towards us, as if he heard us, as if he noticed us watching him. "Is he looking at us?" Anders nervously asked. "I'm not sure. I didn't think they could see us back," I responded, completely flummoxed by the man's apparent acknowledgement of our existence. "They never have before. Did you look away? Did we break a rule?" Anders inquired. "No, I haven't, but the Game Master did say tonight's game would be challenging. Maybe this is what he meant." "I don't know, man, but I don't like it." Anders was becoming noticeably anxious and fidgety, and I guess his nerves must have gotten the better of him as he decided to address the man in the hall. "Hey, guy, can you see me? Can you hear me?" The man lifted his eyes slowly, almost mechanically, nodded his seared head while remaining completely mute. "What the fuck?" Anders whispered to himself before calling out to the man again. "Well, we don't want any trouble, all right? All right?" The burnt man in the hall ignored Anders' question, however, as the obviously agitated Anders shouted out once more, "Well, say something, you crispy fuck."
Wow.
The man's expression changed into this deeply hateful scowl, as without turning his face from ours, his body twisted and shifted beneath him, so that he was now fully oriented in our direction. He started to breathe these deep, exaggerated, almost hyperventilated breaths faster and faster until suddenly he took off in a dead sprint right at us. I leapt back out of shock, but kept sure not to peel my eyes away from the glass as he hurtled down the hall and right up to the other sides of the panes. Like a lunatic, he began vigorously smashing and slamming his fists against the window as he started screaming at us in this low, growling snarl, "Let me in! Let me in! Let me in!" As he pounded away at the panes between us, cracks started to fan out from the repeat barrage of impacts. Anders frantically pleaded, Dave, what's going on? Is he going to get in here? My heart was racing as I wondered the same thing. Nothing like this had ever happened before. Nothing had ever seen us, let alone spoke to us. His voice was getting angrier and louder until, as his blows on the glass became more and more forceful. Let me in. Let me in. Let me beep. Just like that, the room fell silent once more. Fuck, I don't want to play anymore, Dave. Do you think we can just turn it? Anders was interrupted as the next sound began to play, and we were forced to open our eyes. Before us was an expansive, barren field lined by thick forest around its edges, all of which was encapsulated in our now shattered view. Damn it, look, Dave, the glass is still cracked. Why is it still cracked? I wasn't sure what to say. I'd hoped it was just one of the game's tricks, just an illusion. I reached out my hand and touched the glass only to feel that its once smooth surface was now, in fact, textured. I was unable to contemplate the matter further, however, as the cell was filled with this haunting wailing, and as I scanned the trees in the distance, my veins ran cold when I located its source. Standing alone between two twisted, gnarling oaks was a forlorn woman in period clothing. She, too, seemed to be peering directly at it. She was peering directly into our window to notice our presence, but she was far away. I was unable to tell exactly where her gaze was landing. Adorning her face appeared to be a veil of sorts, stopping just below her nose, and though the mournful cry seemed to emanate from her, her lips looked parsed and still. She stood frozen, and even as a strong wind swayed the treetops, neither her hair nor her dress wavered. The sight of her made me uneasy. Something told me she was somehow more dangerous. Her intentions were more insidious than the burned man who had just been banging on our glass. The uneasiness magnified as the wailing came to an abrupt stop, and though I never saw her move, my heart sank, and she was now directly in front of the trees she'd just been between. And what's more, her upper body was now contorted, her arms and neck disturbingly angled and rigid as if she'd been afflicted by severe rigor mortis. Did I blink, I thought? I couldn't remember. I didn't think that I had, but I didn't see her so much as a twitch, and now somehow she was closer, as if she'd teleported or paused time for a moment. Dave, did you see her move at all? No, I didn't, did you? Not an inch, but she's closer, right? I'm not crazy, Emma. No, she's definitely closer now, I just don't know how. I was then stricken with this overwhelming urge to close my eyes, to look away. I tried to fight it, but as I kept forgetting I was supposed to keep them open, my eyelids felt heavy, and all I wanted to do was rest them. Just as I felt them starting to shut, beep. I can't explain it, but I had never been so relieved to hear that beep. Something about her felt wrong. It felt as if I was seeing something evil, something unnatural. The game must have sensed my wariness of the woman. It must have sensed that it was close to winning, because when the next sound began, to my horror, it was the forlorn woman again, a few feet closer this time, her limbs now twisted into new but no less unsettling positions, and then as quickly as she appeared, beep, followed in rapid succession by the next sound, and the woman appeared once more and closer still, and then beep, then again and again and again, until she had closed the distance considerably and was standing terribly bent half up the field. The beeping became so frequently, so quick, that I no longer had time to take in the flashing strobes of images before me. Instead, I found myself struggling not to get confused and close my eyes when they were meant to be opened. I became disoriented and discombobulated as I blinked rapidly at the game's frantic churning of sound bites. I began to feel dizzy and lightheaded to the point of nearly losing consciousness. I had no concept of how much time had passed and felt as if I was floating through some lapse in space, but suddenly the beep stopped, and in stark contrast to hurried pace before was a long, drawn-out pause before the next sound. I took the opportunity to catch my breath with Anders doing the same. Did you mess up? He asked worriedly through palpitating gasp. No, I don't think so anyway. I think I did it right, but fuck, man, I don't know what was fucking intense. Yeah, I hear you. Let's just get through this. The game can't last much longer. Fuck, I hope not. I don't know how long we've even been playing. It could be minutes or it could be hours for all I know. Yeah, I know what you mean. I'm struggling to keep track of time myself. And what's with that fucking lady? Why does she keep appearing? I don't ever recall seeing the same thing more than once. It's like she's stalking us or something. Our nervous banter was ended by the start of the next sound. When I opened my eyes, I was pleased to see we were no longer looking out upon the woman in the field. But confusion soon wrecked my mind as on the other side of the glass, I beheld myself, or the reflection of myself, at least. Filling our view was an ornate, freestanding mirror in an otherwise dark room. I lifted my arm to see my counterpart do the same. Anders followed suit and confirmed that this mirror was truly portraying us, not a simple trick of the game. The odd thing, though, was that the mirror was reflecting our full image, not just the portion visible through our small window. It was as if the mirror was inside of the cell with us. This is fucking creepy, man, Anders confessed. Yeah, it's creepy, all right. Just then, the mirror captured a dark, vague figure dart in and out of view from within the vents on the wall behind us. What the fuck was that? Anders cried. I don't know. I saw it too, but I didn't see what it was. Is something in the room with us, Dave? The mirror did not leave us in suspense for long. However, is once again behind us. Its reflection caught the vague figure. This time, though, it remained in our view. It was the burnt man from the hospital. His face pressed against the vent cover, wild eyes and ravenous. He started shaking the vent so violently that he managed to expel the screws affixing to the wall. Shit, Dave. Fuck. Fucking shit, man. What do we do? Anders panicked. Just keep looking out the window. Don't turn around. We'll be all right, I falsely assured him. We watched as the burnt crawled upside down out of the vent and up the wall onto the ceiling above us. His hateful eyes were now peering between our shoulders and bouncing back off from the silver pane outside. Fuck, fuck, Anders screamed as the burnt man suddenly lurched from the ceiling towards us behind. Fearfully and without thinking, Anders instinctively turned his gaze from the window to meet our oncoming attacker. And, beep, shit, I exclaimed, Anders, are you there, Anders? Call as I might, Anders did not reply, and aside from the echoes of my own unheeded shouts, the room remained silent until the next sound began to play. It was a familiar sound, the sound of something being pulled over hardwood, and then to my dismay and disbelief, I saw Anders on the other side of the glass, dragging a chair to the center of the room. He positioned himself in his seat directly in front of me and sat down upon it. He proceeded to reach into his pant leg and retrieve a now blood-soaked butcher knife. Just as the old man before him, he held it in his hands and looked upon it with loving admiration. Next, he gripped it firmly in his palm and thrust it up over his shoulder. His eyes rolled up to meet mine, and when they did, that look of adoration morphed into one of heartbreaking fear, as in a helpless whisper, he simply said, Dave. Just as his desperate plea rolled from his tongue, I watched as with great force, he launched the blade down and towards his stomach. I couldn't help it. I looked away. Then, beep. The sound played immediately after, before I could collect myself, before I felt gravity of what I'd done, and all of a sudden I was once again looking out to the desolate tree-lined field and the forlorn woman now mere feet away. Her veil was lifted, revealing eyes black as coal as her jaw unhinged and opened wider than seemed possible. The cell around me filled with a horrendous, unintelligible screech as the very foundation I was standing on began to shake and quiver. My ears were ringing as the light above me buzzed louder and louder while shining brighter and brighter until it finally popped like a balloon, meeting the needle's edge. I covered my ears with my hands and I shut my eyes and doubled over as I backed in the corner of the cell. I heard the glass cracking further and shards rain down onto the floor. I knew that this was it, that I had lost, that I would be the next person to sit where Anders had just sat. But then, just as I had conceded myself a victim to the game, the game's will, beep, followed by, "All right, you window watchers and pain peepers, that's going to conclude tonight's installment of the window game. See something you like, something you didn't? Call in and sound off until..." As fast as I could, I yanked the radio's cord from the outlet and tossed it against the opposite wall as it exploded into 100 pieces. I sat nervously, half expecting the wraith-like woman to materialize before me. Eventually, my rattled nerves simmered down enough for me to take inventory over what had just happened. I first examined the window to see the glass was now completely busted in. Next, I called a guard and told them Anders had slipped out of the shattered glass while I was sleeping. I don't know whether or not they bought it, but with no other explanation, what else could they do? Anyway, that was the last time I ever played the window game. After my father finished speaking, something about the conviction and fear in his voice told me he wasn't just making the whole thing up. Still, something didn't add up, so I asked him one last question to clear up my confusion. "So you broke the rules and nothing happened to you? The game didn't suck you in like Anders?" After a long, uneasy pause, he looked over to me and said, "I wouldn't say nothing happened. Every once in a while, when I look out a window, even still to this day, well, sometimes I see the lady from the field. And it doesn't happen all the time, but when it does, when I see her, she's always a little closer than the time before." I've got chills like crazy. "I don't want to know what will happen when she finally reaches the glass, so I avoid looking out of windows as much as I can. I kept my word, and I didn't pester my dad any further about it. I could tell it was bothering him. And it did make me wonder, though, if perhaps I could happen upon this broadcast myself. I know I made my dad a promise I wouldn't play, but I feel the urge to see if it's real, a responsibility to confirm its existence, almost." And that's the end. Hmm. Now, that story is so freaking scary. That would be such a good movie, right?
Yeah.
It'd be a good scary movie.
Yeah.
So anyway, in the comments, somebody says, "Hello, I know what game you're talking about. My friends and I played a while ago, and I didn't get extremities like that. Though my friend lost with bugs. A huge bug flew and hit the window and he jumped back and closed his eyes. Later in the night, he started vomiting cockroaches. My other friend, who I won't name, lost to one similar to the mirror one. However, in the background, he saw his dead mother. It was horrible, and he has been suffering with PTSD after that. I haven't played since. I've always been too scared to resume play because I'm afraid something bad will happen to me like it did with my friends." And then somebody said, "Are you bringing a Bible on your little road trip?" That was such a wonderful story. I mean, I had chills pretty much the whole time when it would do the beep noise and then something new. But that lady that he kept seeing, you know how like, is it the ring where she's like walking and she's like doing all that crazy stuff, you know, that contorting? That stuff is so freaking scary. You know it?
Right.
Oh my gosh. You guys, I hope you got a pretty good chill out of this haunted ritual. I thought we needed to step it up and bring it a little bit tonight. Do you have anything you need to say? You good?
I'm good.
Okay. Well, everybody, it feels like summer is here.
It does feel like summer's here.
I know. Put those shorts on, wear your short sleeve shirts, all that good stuff. Drink lots of water and make good choices. We'll see you guys next Sunday.
Bye.
Bye.
Carmen Brah.